It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Alright, so today I heard the funniest joke I think ever in the world.
Okay.
I think a lot of people will disagree with me. They are wrong.
Okay.
Oddly enough, you may not. I think you're going to like this one.
All right.
It is an important part of this to know that this joke was from Eugene Merman, stand-up comedian, voice actor. Most of you who would know him would either know him as the voice of Gene, the son, on Bob's Burgers, or the voice of, I don't remember what his name was, but Cheryl on Archer has a brother who he plays.
Okay.
And he's been on a few times.
I don't know either of those. So.
He's hilarious. He's a hilarious gentleman. Yes, and his name is Eugene Merman. I no idea if he's any relation to Ethel. Really kind of hope he is, but I don't have any idea. So I'm listening to the Comedy Central's radio thing today, and they just play, like, sometimes they'll play whole albums, but frequently it's like a track off of somebody's comedy special or whatever.
Sure.
And this one was him, and it starts with choking noises. And the audience is kind of like a couple laughs, but everybody's like, this doesn't seem... And he sort of recovers eventually, and he clearly... based on what I'm hearing, he very clearly... It wasn't on purpose.
Oh.
He was like, he took a swig of his water bottle, and it was, so he... But his comeback is just like, why did I do that? And they all laugh. He's like, I can't breathe water. And they all laugh, and he goes... I'm not a real merman. And that's when I fell out of my chair. Best joke ever. Especially because I refuse to believe, as committed an artist as he is, I refuse to believe that he wrote a joke in which he first chokes on water. That would be awful. So I think that was spontaneous, which means it's awesome. Yeah. So
that's pretty good.
But it doesn't work unless you know who he is. Like,
that's true.
If I was like Joan Rivers said it,
yeah.
He's like, what? Is that happening? Hello. See, I thought you'd like...
I do like...
That was a fun thing. I was like, I'm going to tell him. I'm like, holy crap, for once, like, William won't be, like, embarrassed slash upset about the joke I'm telling. Like, it's clean. It's not... It's really not an offensive. Like, it doesn't insult him. I mean... You know, if you want to get all stranger in a strange land and it's supposedly all humor is pain. And you could make an angle. But no, basically it's not making fun of anyone except potentially his name. So, so yeah, no, it's a pretty nice joke.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But, except you have to start it with this is his joke. Like, that's fun. Nobody can steal that joke.
That's true.
Except Ethel.
Yeah, except Ethel.
Which somehow would make it funnier. I mean, I think she's dead, but that would be hilarious. If she's like, I'm not a real merman. I'm like, well, yeah, for two reasons. Three, if you count that they don't exist, but, you know, whatever. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world that opened with Eugene Merman's merman joke. I am confident of that.
Yeah, probably.
Even ones he might do, or like fan podcasts or whatever, I'm betting did not specifically open with that joke.
Probably.
Ever.
Probably.
So, we're special. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 343.
Is it?
Yes.
See, I was going to say 342.
Well, the last one was 342.
That would make sense if you're saying it's...
Pretty sure.
I should
now
say...
Don't make me doubt myself here.
Your comments show a consistent perspective.
Yes.
So... I'm less likely to doubt you're lying in that you have not contradicted yourself there.
Good. Thank you.
No, I'm totally willing to believe you. Oh, my God. The last few weeks, people are like, I thought something, like, normally in the past, like, I try and be gracious, but I'm always like, no, I think you might be wrong, you know, because I always think I'm right. So the last like going back to work and everything, I give everybody else the benefit. Like anytime I'm like, I think it might be, I'm like, that is totally possible. I'm in a lot of pain a lot of times. I'm on a lot of drugs, not sleeping well. My money is on the not me, which in this case is you, so yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah,
let's explain the show real fast here. Okay. If those of you who never listened before, this is how the show works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks, cool folks like yourselves, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifests physically within the hat itself. We, its elk-like servants, draw the cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them to our board, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. I feel like the hand gestures help me remember it.
That's
I
good.
I should keep that in mind in the future. I want to pause just for a second before we get into how was your week, something that affected all of our weeks, Tom Petty's death.
Yeah.
I know what you guys thought I was going for. You thought I was going to say the U.S.'s biggest mass shooting in history, but I'm not, because I don't know what to say about that. I don't want to talk about that. I'm not going to say anything that surprises you guys. It's awful. You know, I think you have a pretty good sense at this point of where William and I's position lie on the issue politically and so forth. Exactly. So I don't even want to talk about that. But this is one of those I was surprised. Tom Petty's death. First of all, I was surprised at his death.
Yeah.
Like, in my head, if you're like, who might die? He's not on the list. He's 60 at the time, or 66.
66,
yeah, 66. Yeah. And he's still doing it. There was one of my coworkers was like, I saw him 4 years ago live, and he's still Tom Petty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, a lot of touring bands later, they're like, oh, it's that old guy singing a hit from the 60s poorly. Like, he's like, no, he's still, like,
well, and he wasn't sick. He didn't have...
No, it was a heart attack, yeah.
Yeah, accidental or anything.
I'm almost a little bit happy about the fact that it wasn't cancer or drugs, because it seems like it's always freaking cancer or drugs.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And I was like, this is a normal... Like, nothing about his death is tarnishing his memory.
No, that's true.
Not that cancer tarnishes your memory. I just get tired of everybody fucking having cancer. I'm just, yeah. That was not tied into it being a celebrity. I am just tired of people having cancer.
It's not an unusual thing for a 66-year-old to have a heart attack. Is what it comes down to. It's still sad, of course. I was a fan of Tom Petty,
and he's very much one of those. I've noticed Elton John is this. There's a lot of ones that like. Snap decision, you talking to me like, you Tom Petty fan? I'm like, no, I mean, he's fine, I don't really care. But then, like, if I stop and think, I'm like, wow, no. I've been a fan of a lot of his music. A lot of his music has played significant roles in my life. It's one of those things, I'm like, it's like, yeah. Well, and my first version of this was always Creedence Clearwater Revival. Like, I wouldn't have thought I even liked them, let alone, like, was a big fan or whatever. And then I saw a thing that was like, all their hits, and I knew every single one, and I liked almost every. I was like, holy crap, I'm a CCR fan, I had no idea. But yeah, Tom Petty's one. I'm not saying his death caused that. This happened a few years ago. I was like, wow, I'm really kind of into Tom Petty.
Well, I never had a device that stores music of any kind, really. Like an iPod or whatever.
I had a box I used to sing poems into, and then at night I'd open up and listen to them to sleep.
But if I did have one, Tom Petty would have been one of those artists that would definitely had a collection of songs in there along with.
And he sort of had a soundtrack, folks, because throughout William's adolescence, people were constantly saying, "Don't come around here no more," just all the time.
And they didn't have to say it; I could just tell by the look in their eyes. But the thing about Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, the thing about their music is it just, and I heard him talk one time about one of his albums and getting together and making it. And the way he described their process was exactly how the music sounds, which is we get together, we jam a little bit, we write the songs. I mean, it's like total garage band kind of thing, total authentic sound, just everything just sounds pure, but not, but also skilled. I mean, there's a lot of garage band sound that you can listen to and like that's raw, you know, and you get the impression the person isn't a virtuoso at their instrument, but it's still kind of cool. This you got the best of both worlds with Tom Petty, as far as I'm concerned. You got that authentic, very garage band, everyone's getting together to jam kind of sound, and you know, all the musicians knew what they were doing. It was just, I don't know, it was just good music to listen to.
I'm not ignoring you. I'm specifically looking up something on my phone relate here. I'm still totally listening.
So when I saw that he passed on, I was really affected by it. But you know what's interesting? Someone told me that some news outlet reported his death several hours before it actually happened.
I didn't hear that. I know that following various news outlets, there were definite, like, they did not all report at the same time by quite a long time. But, I mean, I guess I could see it because it was the night before he had the heart attack and went to the hospital.
Yeah.
And other people were saying that they had heard that he'd been taken off life support. And because, like, when I was one of the people, I don't know why I'm like this, but I was going around telling people as soon as I found out. I was going to my coworkers who I thought would care. And I was telling one, she's like, oh, no. And the person next to us was like, I thought that was last night. I heard they took him off life support. So there may have been some miscommunication there. And off the top, again, I know nothing, well, people.
That's just what I heard.
But off the top of my head, I can think of two different possible meanings for taking someone off life support. And maybe there was some confusion there.
Well, I mean, of course.
Like, maybe they could be like, he doesn't need this now.
Well,
so
some
stop,
people live a while after they're taken off life
support. Also true. And I mean, yeah, so there was a long period of time between the attack and the death, so it's possible somebody just jumped the gun.
Yeah.
The older I get, and this is not just true of music, this is true of art, this is true of media, I give a lot of credit to people who look like they really love whatever it is. Like, the creators look like they love it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, in some cases, if the creators... Hold on. Hello? All right, we'll meet you at the door. Apparently that was a delivery guy. Sorry, I tried to time this one, and I timed this one horribly. I thought I would actually get here before you showed up. This is the Tony's Dinner Interlude song that we have almost every week. If people seem like, there's a lot of comedies that I will like, even if they're not really that good, because I'm just like,
these people are
having
a great time.
Looks like they were having a hell of a time
doing it. That's right.
Which means I should maybe revisit Oklahoma, because that musical is a musical I've always said that looks like it's so fun to do, and it's so terrible to watch. So maybe sure is it, but yeah, and I feel like Tom Petty always felt very real, like he was doing what he loved, and that's why he was making the music. Like, this was not I need money, or this is what these demographics like. Like, it really seemed like he was writing the stuff that he wanted to write because it was in him, and yeah.
Well, yeah, he was he was a true artist, and just like any artist, his work wasn't going to be for everybody, but I guess the way I'd put it is he's an artist. You know, I mean, I write songs. I've done that for most of my life. So there are certain songwriters who you can really appreciate because they, you know, that's their craft. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you can really appreciate the level that they've reached in it. And, for some people who aren't songwriters, I mean, they're probably just judges' work based completely upon, you know, how it impacts them personally, which is, that's how art is. But when you are a songwriter, you tend to, sometimes maybe a song won't speak to you personally, but you'll just really think that the songwriting aspects of it, the music, the lyrics, how they go together, and all that other stuff, that's what resonates with you. Just, wow, how they put it together.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's kind of, there are certain types of art that I notice it more than others. Comedy's a huge one for me. There'll be something that I'm like, I don't find that funny at all, but it's a personal taste issue. And I'll tell you right now, that dude is a genius, and that is a finely crafted joke.
Exactly, exactly.
Like, and so, yeah, so when you can recognize an artist, and that's the thing with Tom Petty, like, none of, all of his stuff, I don't like all of his stuff, but I'm like, I get
it's,
it.
It's solid,
sounds
yeah.
like a Tom Petty song. It doesn't sound like something you
yep.
threw off.
Yeah, it's solid, solid yeah. stuff, yeah.
I was pulling up stuff on my phone because the producer is in California right now.
Oh.
There is a testers conference that happens in October every year out there, and she's gone a few years, and she likes it. Last year, she talked to her sister, Stephanie, about... Her sister, Stephanie, had a bunch of extra vacation time, and she was like, you know, if you want to fly out also for the week, and we'll pay for, to add you to the hotel room, I'll go to the conference, you hang out by the pool or whatever, and then in the evenings we'll freaking go to Disneyland. Because it was like in Anaheim, California, was actually where the conference is. And she said, sure, and so they did it. And Halloween is also when it gets all Halloween-y at Disney.
Yeah.
So the villains are actually out.
Oh, that's
a lot
cool.
of things are decorated, stuff like that. So they just had a blast.
Oh, good.
And so this year, Trish had, was going to it again, and she's like, want to do it again? So they're there now.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, they're going a little more serious. A couple nights ago, I got that.
Oh, wow.
They are doing cosplay. There's the action shot.
So, the producer is Loki?
Yes.
Oh.
And Stephanie is Hawkeye.
Oh, I see one there.
They are doing cosplay, as I say, and then Captain America's in the middle. And like, I said this to somebody earlier, I'm like, that's Disneyland, so that's the real Captain America. And I don't mean that that's Chris Evans. I'm like, legally, though, yeah. that's Captain America.
Right.
Like, that is not a knockoff in front of the Chinese theater. Like, that's him. Yeah, they're doing cosplay, which is when you cosplay as someone but the opposite gender.
That they're usually presented
yes.
as, yeah.
And so my wife is Girl Loki, and Stephanie is Girl Hawkeye. Not that I would ever call them that, because you know how I hate that kind of crap. Anytime somebody says, you left your man purse, I'm like, shut up, it's my purse. Or merce. Heaven help you if you tell me it's a merce. I'm going to hurt you. But I just would like to point out, these are homemade costumes and they're awesome. The coolest thing I personally think is that Trish found, I think on Etsy or something, a woman who hand makes interesting mouse ears. And in particular, what she found and what she got was the hybrid Minnie Mouse ears Loki horns.
Oh, hybrid, I see.
Yeah, that's both, which is just, it's like it was made for this trip. So they're having a fun time with that. I wanted to get into, like, how's your week and shit, but I realized that may all go by the wayside here. Did you watch The Room?
Yeah, and I'm sorry I didn't bring it back.
That's fine. Nobody's talk to me. Talk to me.
Well, it was terrible.
But that's just the first, that's the top layer.
That's right.
So many people don't look beyond the veneer of it just being a really shitty movie.
I guess I didn't personally feel like there was anything unique about its terribleness. I did think about it later, though, and realized it's a little like Ed Wood, right? He makes.
I think that's not a bad comparison.
It's a little like that, where when you watch an Ed Wood film, what interests you about it is Ed Wood, right? It's like it. Mm-hmm. What it's about is what kind of person would make this. Okay, and so, and in that way, I can kind of see the point, especially since, because this is something we've talked about with other movies, where I'll watch. You know, my wife likes horror movies, and see, this time of year, she really likes to watch horror movies or thrillers or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So we try out things, and a lot of times, it's terrible. But one of the things that sort of starts to fascinate me about these things is I start to realize how differently the people who are making these films see the world.
Yes.
Now let's use The Shining as an example. I'm not going to say The Shining is the best movie ever made, but a lot of people like it, so I want to use
yeah.
an example. When I watch The Shining, I see a film that's, you know, there's a lot of craft, there's a lot of subtlety, there's a lot of interesting things going on. But I have a feeling that some people who are fans of The Shining see something completely different. And in fact, if I could see what they see, I would think that the film is total crap. But whatever it is they see, they think is great. So then when they go to make their own horror movie...
No, wait, they think it's crap. Whatever you see, you think it's great.
If I could see what they see, I would think what they're seeing is crap.
Okay.
But they think what they're seeing is great.
Oh, okay.
See what I'm saying?
Okay, I think.
Because then they go and make a movie.
Yes.
And it's crap. But they think it's great.
Yes.
Because whatever it is they see in films, whatever that is weird and bizarre, by my standards anyway, is weird and bizarre, but to them it's amazing. So when they make a film, they think it's amazing. So here's this guy. What's his name that made the room?
Tommy Wiseau.
Okay. He clearly sees the world in a very particular way that's very different. Then at least very different than how I see it.
No, than every other human
probably,
being.
Probably than every human being.
That's the thing. It's sort of like how people are like, The Crow was an okay movie, but because of all the shit with Brandon Lee, like, people are more interested.
Yeah.
Tommy Wiseau is a mystery. Nobody actually knows where he's from. He's told different stories, or what he did when he came to this country, because he's definitely not from here. Nobody knows where he got the money. He paid for all of that himself, and there are, like, four different stories out there about where he got the money. XKCD made a joke that is totally a joke, and I am sure it is not true, but it's plausible enough to be freaky that he's freaking D.B. Cooper. Like, too many fucking things line up. It is absolutely 100% not true, but, like, it almost works, and you're like, holy shit. Like, he's a complete mystery, up to and including, I'm not sure what his skeleton looks like. His body is weird. Well, and I don't know how that works.
It's just, you just have to wonder. And again,
and this was originally a 5,000-page novel.
A 5,000-page novel?
Supposedly, yes.
Okay, well, here's the thing.
That he had been writing for years, and then it turned into this. He was supposed to be a vampire.
This movie isn't the first time I've thought about this. Because, like I said, I've seen a lot of movies that I can tell the filmmakers think they're great.
Yes.
And I know what those filmmakers are getting from other films that they think are great.
Yes.
And those other films, I never saw that in those other films, the crappy stuff that they're pulling out of it. So there's something about the way they perceive the world that's very different from the way I see it, which, you know, that's human nature,
that's
I suppose.
Fine. Yeah.
But every once in a while you run into someone like this guy who really must see things different. I mean... Probably the more interesting than the film was we watched the interview with him in the special features. That was even more interesting.
And it is weird because he's also totally playing the game. He's found out a way that he can monetize this even though nobody likes it. And so now that's why he always talks about how it's a comedy now and stuff. And in interviews, he gets... So you saw the thing about at football. Is it fun? And
Yeah.
And... He claims to be in on the joke, but a lot of times
he's
clearly not.
No, he
but
is
then
not.
It's like there are moments. What I really find this, for me, as usual, it's an anthropology thing.
Yeah, it's
like somebody said, here's a tribe of humans that has never had any contact with any other humans, and we're going to show you their mating ritual. And I watch it, and first of all, I'm like, wow. Fascinating. And second of all, there's a part of me that's like, what part of that makes you want to have sex? What part of that demonstrates your value as a mate? Like, I don't get it, but clearly they do. What does that mean? It's amazing. Except in this case, it's not even a different tribe. First of all, it's only one guy. And second of all, absolutely has to be extraterrestrial. Like, it's just, this is what he thinks humans are like.
You know, that's an interesting thing you just said. Because... one of the things you and I have in common that I think sometimes alienates us from other people, because in our culture this is actually fairly unusual, and I don't know why, but we appreciate the existence of culture to begin with. You know, culture exists.
Otherwise, my degree would be worthless. It
shapes people's experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just something you and I take for granted, and a lot of the people who listen to us do too, Jazz and some of the people. We just take for granted that there's a thing called culture that people more or less make up. They don't sit down necessarily and make it
up, but
it emerges in interaction and negotiation.
Aggregates into a thing.
Yeah, and then it comes back and it shapes them, and it's kind of a feedback loop thing between culture and the people from whence it emerges. We just take this for granted. We see this all over the place. But I'm sure you've experienced this too. I go out in the world and I very frequently see people thinking that a particular practice that is involved in their life, they were born with it.
Yeah, it's what
everybody in the world
it's
does.
It's instinctual. Everybody.
Or it's
and I mean, I understand the concept. I do still get surprised.
Well, yes, of course. I mean, like, because there's going to be a lot of taken for granted stuff in your cultural.
As I learn about the distinct experience. Different kinds of toilets out there, some of them I'm just like, wow, really?
But
that's not even a joke. There's some interesting ones.
But you're surprised and intrigued. Other people are going to be offended or not even see
that
it.
That doesn't make sense.
Or in denial.
That's the thing, yeah. Because it's in incorporated into the culture is always the idea that the culture is what is normal.
Yeah.
Which in a social sense, like strictly speaking, is true.
Sure, in that
but in a pejorative sense, absolutely not.
That's right. That's
and
right.
So there's a whole lot of that. That's when you get things when they say, well, common sense says that's not right, or that's just plain weird, which is a phrase I like to say a lot, but when I say it, I'm mostly complimenting people. Or, of course, that isn't natural.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's a big one. But one place where you see culture working in a dramatic and interesting way is in art. And music, you go to different countries and you visit different cultures, and the music is very different. The music might not sound to you like anything pleasant that you would want to listen to, but to those people, it's melodious and relaxing and all kinds of other things.
Cultural difference in filmmaking, too, that
yeah.
there are certain, especially if you go far enough east in terms of nations, where there's certain parts that I'm like, I feel like they make films differently. Like, they
yeah.
expect something, they act differently in a film.
Sure.
Like I think they're shooting for a different end result or something.
Food is another one that is heavily culturally impacted. That a lot of
what the hell you do with your French fries? I'm pretty sure people have gone to war over what you do with your French fries.
So here's this guy, and again, Ed Wood is similar. He, for whatever reason, he seems singular, but obviously something in both of their lives happened to give them a particular point of view. They're probably not the only ones who have it, but they seem unique and singular in this worldview, and I'm sure to him, all of this makes perfect sense.
Oh, yeah.
And
no, absolutely.
And I could even imagine that there might be a culture where this film would be considered high art, probably even.
In my culture.
No.
No, no, no. This is the thing.
Come on now.
No, no.
I'm
here's
trying to
the
be
deal.
Serious.
I'm serious. You're familiar with the concept of outsider art?
Well, I think so, yeah.
I feel like this might be the first ever occasion of a feature-length film that's outsider art instead of, like, a sculpture or something. Like, I... No, like...
Well, but see...
I love this movie,
he's not
is what I'm saying.
He's not unusual in this, though. I mean, one of the... Again,
and I love it kind of unironically while acknowledging it's one of the worst movies ever made.
Well, I've seen other movies where they're not good, but... Okay, some films aren't good because, I don't know, they got rushed in editing, or they didn't get their shots,
there's
but they ran out of money.
There's a bunch of, yeah.
But there's,
the acting was bad.
Yeah, but there are some films that you can tell aren't good because the people who made it, it's not even really that they're not good. It's that the people who made it approached the craft in a completely different way than you would expect, or in our culture, perhaps even like.
Mm.
Which means that it's not bad per se, it's just not your cup of tea, really.
Yeah.
And it's kind of difficult to say that because, you know, when, like in this movie, when a lot of the dialogue is so, I don't know how to describe it.
It feels like it's poorly improvised, and it's absolutely not improvised.
Well, but also, we're going, there's a lot of...
Well, I think we've spoiled stuff on the podcast when I first saw it. There's shit like a woman telling her daughter she has breast cancer, and then it never comes up again in the movie.
Yeah. It's specifically designed for that scene to get a specific response, but it doesn't have anything to do with the larger story at all.
So, you know how, like around the near the end, and they have the party and everything, and there's that guy who gets really involved and you've never seen him before.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember the guy beforehand, like when we were in Texas, if that was the psychologist friend with the glasses? But you know, when they were playing football in Texas and going cheap.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
There was all the there were the three guys you knew and this other guy.
Oh, there was the other guy. Okay.
Yeah, I think he was like the calm, cool, because I think he was supposed to be a psychologist or something.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
He was the closest thing to a real actor this movie had, and it went over schedule so bad. He had another commitment and was like, "I'm leaving." So they rewrote the parts he was going to have in the second half as a new character.
Oh, that was supposed to be
him?
That
was supposed to be
him.
Because I remember watching it and being like, we have never seen this guy before, and he is heavily invested in these people's lives.
Well, like, he's supposed to matter.
And he's been introduced as Steve. Like, that's it.
Oh, so hi,
like,
Steve.
Oh, hi, Steve. That's the plan.
Yeah, I mean, it just...
But, okay, so now, have you rewatched the trailer for Disaster Artist?
No, but I
feel like because like it is teasing me that it may have answers to questions that I have, like, because that's, and also it is teasing me that it thinks of the movie in the same way I think of the movie.
Okay, well, my personal response to the movie is, okay, it's bad. It's not really unique bad, although I can see a kind of
I can't even get over that idea that it's not even really unique bad, because I feel like it's unique by quality. Other than an Ed Wood film, tell me another actual movie that was like worse.
Well, see, it's just
or that even was as bad.
I can only speak according to my own taste. Like, this is a movie that only a few minutes into it, I would have stopped watching it. I mean, I wouldn't even have watched the rest of it.
Yeah.
And in that way, it's the same as every other movie that I would have stopped watching.
Maybe you just haven't seen it. I don't know. Like,
after the fact, I could acknowledge that the badness of the film revolves completely around this one guy. And that it's kind of interesting how he must see the world or what's going on here. But that's still not enough.
And those people still said those lines, though. I mean, like, I don't want to give him... When it comes to the poor quality, I mean, Denny alone, the dude sat down in frame behind the couch. Like, the couch was blocking most of him and finished his dialogue. And Chris R. Remember Chris R.?
Okay, but they were just...
His name was Chris... There was no other Chris in the movie, people.
They were just taking direction. But, this is what they were told to say and do.
I feel like I could have done better deliveries on some of these, especially with Lisa. Although Lisa wasn't supposed to be Lisa. Lisa was going to be the friend with the weird chocolate fetish. But then the actual Lisa, like, wised up or was kicked off or something. And so she essentially got upgraded.
Well, okay.
The music, in the sex scene music especially, was just...
Terrible.
It now, was the most amazingly terrible and generic, like, smooth R&B music that people who have never had sex think you have sex to, but then also they wrote it themselves and it's terrible.
But that's not the worst part. The worst part is they played the whole song.
Yeah.
Like, the length of the sex scene was however long the song was.
There are four sex scenes in this movie.
Like, right at the beginning.
We don't need any of them. And one of the participants is the same in all of them, and the other two are split up between two other people. So a total of three people have four sex scenes that you just hate. In the first half hour of the movie or something. Yeah.
But...
He
clearly sees a narrative here. Well, this achieves this narrative thing, and this achieves this narrative thing.
And Johnny was going to be a vampire. I can't...
You know, I forgot about that.
Yeah. He was going to be a vampire, like, a long time ago. And then the final thing, he was going to... The way he was going to be a vampire, nothing about the movie was going to change, except at the end, he was going to get in... He wouldn't what happened wouldn't happen, and he would get in the car, and the car would fly away, and that's how you'd know he was a vampire.
Well, that's very different than how it ended.
Well, yes.
I mean, to me, the ending seemed very important.
I'm sure.
Like,
although, again, rewatch the trailer for The Disaster Artist, and you'll see a new perspective on that last scene.
I think, because the one thing as an actor he did best was be dead. He's a very convincing dead guy.
Yeah.
One of the most convincing dead guys I've ever seen in film, actually.
I feel like a lot of that is like physiological more than talent-based.
Could be.
Dude looks like a corpse.
But it seemed like an important moment. Like,
oh, yeah.
You were supposed to be crushed by this.
And they were, I don't know why I'm pretty sure we spoiled it. Also, the trailer for the new movie spoils it. At the end, the main character played by Tommy Wiseau shoots himself in the head. And he's dead. And there's only like three real people in the movie. And they all show up, and they are acting their butts off in that scene. Like, they are just... Like somebody may have inserted cattle prods on them and like shoot, because they're screaming and crying. Not believable, mind you, but high energy, very high energy morning.
But a lot of the film is spent trying to get you to really like this guy.
Oh yeah, no, he's absolutely the hero, and it's a huge tragedy.
It's also kind of a Mary Sue thing because
you think,
you know, that's a term that gets thrown around way too much, like applied to. You know, Rey and Star Wars, which doesn't make any sense because, first of all, Mary Sue is supposed to be the fantasy of the person writing it.
Yes, the creator is putting themselves as a character, and that character is the most important, most popular, most powerful, most significant thing in the narrative.
Right.
That's what a Mary Sue
means. But it's not simply that they've got a lot of positive attributes or they've got a lot of powers. It's more to the point they don't have really any significant weaknesses, or their weaknesses are like the kind that you have in job interviews. Well, if I have one weakness, I work so dang hard.
And, they're super happy, that's...
Right, I mean, because...
Everybody falls in love with
them. A Mary Sue can have all kinds of powers that are perfectly well explained. That's not the point. The point is they don't have any particular weakness. Now, that's what this character was like.
Clearly what he was going for. Yeah. The message that I thought the movie ended up conveying was more like, there's this guy, and everybody fucking hates him because he's just a shit. Not because he's a bad guy, but he's just so stupid that we're all fucking sick of him, and we're just giving up being friends with him. And eventually he kills himself, and for some reason we find that really sad. Now that I think about it, there's several other movies that are like that.
What I got from it was... I mean, because...
None of the relationships were believable, is
what
I'm saying.
Well, none of this was shown. It was said. He had a good job.
Yes. He's an American hero.
He deserved...
a good job.
He deserved a promotion but wasn't getting one.
He doesn't drink.
Yeah, in other words, I saw this guy... I saw the presentation... Or they wanted to tell you, not show you, but tell you, here's a guy... who is awesome, but his fiance has some character flaw that makes her bored with him or something. Bored, I guess, with him.
Her character flaw is she's maybe the worst person ever.
Well, but the connection between how she's acting and him is that he's too good, right?
Yeah, so
she's
a little. That's I guess that's what he was.
So she's a little bored.
I feel like you're giving this more clarity than it deserves.
I'm just going with what was. Said by the characters explicitly. Not shown, but actually said.
Okay, but when it comes to that, yes, but I'm pretty sure I could pull up some later Lisa's lines that literally contradict that.
And the best friend did sort of resist it. I mean, there was...
Yeah. It was clearly supposed to be a struggle with him for...
Maybe my perception's being influenced a little bit by the fact that I just, you know, got done reading... You know, about Arthur and Guinevere and Lancelot, which it totally seemed like that. Like, here's Arthur, great, awesome, everybody should love him, everybody does love him.
But you betrayed me.
And you know, so he was betrayed by the people closest to him, and it crushed him.
I never thought I'd say this, but we have to wrap this up here, because otherwise we'll get nothing else. Okay, we haven't even gotten to how your week. But I'm going to blow your mind one more time before we're done with this.
Okay.
And I know at this point, you might think it's not possible. Oh, you're looking... Okay, you're fidgeting. You had a conclusion you wanted to say.
I just wanted to say, by all things considered, I didn't get what anyone's fascination with this film was. really. Maybe even including yours.
And I'm not sure I buy that based on the conversation.
Well, because as I thought about it, I could realize that there's something, just like with Ed Wood, there's something about this guy. And that I can have a conversation about and talk about. But that doesn't really reflect how I felt about it. It reflects how I could, you know, intellectually figure out a way to have a conversation about it. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think I'm starting to get why you're the sociology guy and I'm the anthropology guy. A lot of people are like, they're basically the same disciplines. And I'm like, no, see, because you seem to be more interested in the logistics and the mechanics of relationships and things like that. I'm way more interested in the specific details and the expressions there.
Exactly.
Like, I am way more fascinated with what was going through his head to make this. And you're like, I get basically what he was going for, and he did it really bad.
Well, but I also get how you're interested in that.
Because I'm like, yeah, I want more. I mean, I want to shoot this guy up with sodium pentothal. I know that doesn't work, that's all I can think of. And just make him tell me in detail what was going on.
And I can have a conversation about it. But if it weren't for my relationship with you, I wouldn't even be thinking about
it. Exactly, because you're a sociologist. And sociologically speaking, it's pretty cut dry. It's interesting for a moment, I think. Be like, hey, look at this, how weird. But like, yeah, I feel like you've gotten what you would get out of that. But like I said, I'm gonna blow your mind. One last thing.
Blow my mind.
I'm betting you didn't see the spoon.
The spoon?
The spoon.
I don't know if I
in the room, which is funny because I don't think that's why this movie is named The Room, but it's shot in one room, except there's a loft, but like it's all in the same place. But anyway, in the main set. On his desk, I think. Amongst the various knickknacks, but pretty clear if you're looking for it, there is a framed photo of a spoon. Of a not particularly interesting spoon, modern silverware, flatware spoon.
A photograph of it.
A framed photograph.
No, I don't think I noticed that.
Nobody knows why. Nobody fucking knows why it's there.
But what if there is no reason why? I mean.
But that's the thing. Something about this movie tells me it was all incredibly purposeful.
No, I agree, it probably was.
But I don't, like...
But maybe not an interesting
reason. I'll tell you what it comes down to.
Well, that's the football thing. Well, that wasn't that interesting. It was interesting that he actually...
But it's still weird. I want to know what's going on. Why does he think chickens go cheep, cheep, cheep? Like, so many things. And some of them I can guess, but I think that's what it comes down to. When a movie's good, I like a movie, I can tell you why I like a movie. When a movie is bad, there's a couple things. Either, like, it was... Well, maybe it's like three things. Either, like, they clearly didn't care. Yeah. There's a lot of that.
Phoned it in, yeah.
A lot of the low-budget indie horror movies that are, like, horror comedies are like that. They're like, we just wanted to make a movie. We don't fucking care if we expect it to be bad. Isn't it funny how bad it... Those, yeah. And those just suck, but I'm like, I get why those suck, and I don't care.
Yeah.
And then there's ones where I'm like, I see what the movie they were trying to make, they clearly lacked the skill to do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, none of that's that interesting. But then there's the ones where I'm like, I didn't like it, but I see who they made it for that would like it.
Right, sure.
I don't know who they made this movie for. Like, that's what it comes down to, is I cannot sufficiently model in my head a psyche, and I'm not even saying that would like it, but that they would be trying to attract here. And the more I learn about this guy, the more I think he thinks this is a fairly cliched and straightforward tale. But it's so not that.
Well, I mean, some of
I think he thinks he's sort of telling a classic.
Well, yeah, like story. Arthur and Guinevere.
Exactly.
And
I think he thinks that's what he's doing.
Yeah, yeah, I think he does think that's what he's doing.
But there's so much of it that makes no sense in that context. Mm. And it's weird.
Well, but
and
I some
and, the same and just the very fact that he lives in society like how does he so clearly have no idea how humans work? Like,
but some of his statements even indicate that not only does he think that's what his story is, but he thinks such stories are sorely lacking in our culture. Like, he thinks this story can change the world and help people see things that they didn't see before. Even though the basics of the story he's telling in terms of a guy being betrayed by his best friend and his fiance is pretty standard stuff.
I've run into it once or twice. Yeah. All right, we got to hurry up because we still got to go through our weeks.
Somehow I think it's going to be great. Oh, did you want me to draw this?
I want to know. No, we haven't even talked. What's going on in your week?
I watched The Room. I watched a few other things, but nothing really to speak about. I'm rereading some stuff. I'm reading Dracula again and a few other things, but I don't really have anything to comment on.
I'm still rewatching Arrested Development. I'm midway through the third season. Show fucking holds up. There are dating issues in that there is stuff in it that now I consider a little bit in poor taste.
Oh.
In places, but not too much. I also discovered that of the three seasons, I liked them all, but I didn't realize I liked 1 and 2 way more than I liked 3 for some reason. I'm scared about 4. We'll see if I keep going. But yeah, show fucking holds up. I know there's people who have not seen it. I highly recommend it. But watch it in order. Don't just pick a random episode, or it will not work.
Oh, we're watching American Horror Story, My Roanoke Nightmare also.
But oh!
I won't say anything about that till we're done.
Yeah, no, I know about that, and it's pretty shitty. I thought you were going to say you're watching the current one, and I'm like, oh my god, we have to talk about that.
I probably watched that one for a year.
I need to talk about a movie I saw last night.
Uh-huh.
It's on Netflix. It's called Little Evil. It's actually a Netflix original film.
I keep seeing it.
Trish saw the trailer and was very confused, and I sort of explained it to her later. It's a horror comedy, and it's mostly a comedy. And it's also a pretty straightforward concept. Adam Scott plays a newly married individual, and his stepson is the Antichrist.
That looks like what it's about.
Yes. That is what it's about. I'll tell you, that's what it's about. Mm-hmm. And she was confused, I think. She was like, I can't tell if this is supposed to be funny shit, because it's rated as a horror movie. It's not a horror movie. The content is the same sort of story you would have in a horror movie. And there are a couple of scenes of, like, blood and gore or whatever, but very limited. It's a comedy.
Like the Santa Clara Diet show.
Probably even less horrific than that. But yeah, very much that kind of thing. Well, I mean, or all sorts. There have been, horror comedies are not a new concept. No. It's not great, but I think I like it, and I think I recommend it. And I'm going to say something weird here. It's going to make some people uncomfortable. If it doesn't make you uncomfortable, I'm concerned, because it makes me uncomfortable to say this. But it's just, for some reason in my mind, this is the clearest explanation I have for this film. I'm guessing you have not ever watched any films made by Tyler Perry.
No.
Neither have I. I feel like I have a general concept of what a lot of his movies are like, because I have read about them and heard about them in general.
Okay.
And in particular, his comedies, his Madea films, mostly.
Sure.
I feel like I have a sense.
Okay.
Of what's going on there, and they're mostly funny. And then if we get even more specifically, there's a Madea Halloween movie.
Yeah.
And they're making a second one. I feel like it's okay to say, like, I feel like these movies are made specifically to appeal to a black audience. Not necessarily every black person, but I think the demographic they are going for where they make these movies are for black people to watch. That does also seems to be what it practically is occurring. But I feel like that is an intentional thing.
Yeah, not an accident.
Yes.
I think that's fair to say.
All right, that's the controversial stuff I needed to put out here. This feels to me like if somebody was like, let's make the Madea Halloween movie, but for white people.
Mm.
This is that movie. And I don't just mean it's Madea Halloween, but everybody's white. It's a very different type of thing. Like, I don't think the jokes are similar or anything. I feel like that's the demo they were going for. Is like, this is white people's version of the silly, little scary movie with heart in it, and it's just goofy, and it's not anything to think about too hard. But there is some message, but it's not like this is fun. And that's what it is. Like, there's nothing mind-blowing. It's really fun because it does take the Antichrist satanic trope and was like, what if it happened today? And there's very much that vibe in it. It is also interesting in that there are a lot of other comedians in it. Chris D'Elia is in it. Donald Faison is in it. Chip Zion for no reason is in it. The guy who played the baker in the original Broadway run of Into the Woods. I know it's weird that I know that, but I know that. But he's in this, which was odd. I haven't seen him in forever. And it's worth noting, Bridget Everett is in this movie. Bridget Everett is a comedian. She is a large blonde woman. Like, she's a fat woman with large breasts. And in her comedy, she frequently plays this. Her comedy act is basically mostly focused on, I am a fat woman, and I am very sexually active and have a high sex drive. Most of her joke material revolves around those two things. I'm very horny all the time, and I'm very fat, and whatever. I actually think her comedy is good. I do get a little annoyed that she hits those two very cliched trope points a lot, but I think she's funny.
Okay.
She is in this movie as a coworker of Adam Scott named Al. She's dressed in like flannels and jeans and stuff, but she's fat, but she clearly also still has fairly large breasts. Her hair is still shoulder length blonde or whatever, but early on she is talking with him at work, and he says something about, I'm like that too, I've got a stepkid, and there's a pause, and he's like, a step, and she says, stepdad. And he's like, oh, okay. And I think that's supposed to be a joke. It's like, hey, it's Pat, you know. I think the joke here is that she's this large, ambiguously gendered-looking person, and that's a joke. But here's the thing. That's the only time it comes up, and the rest of the movie, Bridget Everett's character is one of the guys, and is a main character in this movie. But, like, there is never another comment or joke about what... I mean, there's a support group for stepdads, and she's there, and nobody ever, like, says anything. So that joke originally was annoying, and I'm not sure that this is what they were going for, but they basically had a trans man main character where that wasn't the point of the character.
Hmm.
And I enjoyed that a lot.
That's interesting.
And it's just silly fun. Like, it's not... you know how Saturday Night Live makes movies sometimes?
Yeah.
You know how often they suck?
Yeah.
You know how every once in a while they don't?
Yeah.
I feel like this is one of those. It's not one that, like, will go down in history, but you're like, I went to see this Saturday Night movie because the actor for which it is a vehicle is someone I like, and it was pretty good. Mm. Like, it's that kind of movie, and it's on Netflix, so what do you got to lose? So, yeah, I guess I recommend it, but, I mean, as usual, if any of the stuff I said sounds appealing, go for it. If it doesn't, skip it. Weirdly, the mom of the Antichrist... Who's playing the really good mom who's kind of in denial, like you would sort of expect. Evangeline Lilly. And this is not... Huh. I would not have thought this in her wheelhouse particular... I don't think of her comedic actor.
No, I don't
she does a great job. She does a great job.
Huh.
Everybody in it does a great job. And yeah, I really like seeing comedians I know getting work. And that's the thing. They're basically all the stepdads in the support group. And it's pretty funny. I don't think it's rated... It's definitely an R. There is no nudity, but like I said, there is blood, and there's at least one or two F-bombs, but there is no sex or nudity in particular in it, so. And Addie's in the back just screaming for some reason. That's surprisingly not unusual for him. Usually he'll come into a room where humans are, and he just yells at us.
Hmm.
But like, for no, like, he just wants people to pay attention to him.
Oh.
He's not calling for anything. He's just weird. All right, we have a very few minutes. Pull out the thing. I totally thought, I was like, we're going to have a nice, comfortable one. And then suddenly I was like, holy shit, if you watch The Room, our schedule is just blown.
Yeah. I intended to bring it, I'm sorry.
I had to search for it to find it. That's how long it's been since anybody's watched it. So.
If you could receive a true answer to one question, what would the question be?
Oh, there might be a cat outside or something. That might be why he's freaking out. Well, back there is an open window where he can yell at him. I feel like we've had similar questions to this.
That's difficult, actually.
Well, it gets weird. Like, how general can this question be? Does it have to be a yes or no question?
Well, yeah, like, let's say you wanted to ask... Let's say you somehow you were convinced that you could get the absolute... answer to the question of...
We have to assume this automatically. We are going in saying that for whatever reason, we are 100% confident this will be the truth.
Yeah, so
I think that definitely has to be part
you
of the
ask. Let's say you want to ask, is there a God? Well,
that's totally where I was leaning.
Yeah, that's a big question.
Yeah.
But I can... I've been around this question and people posing it enough to suspect that the absolute true answer might not be one I even understand. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I get the answer, and I would be completely convinced that it's true, but I still wouldn't exactly know what the answer was.
Yeah. But this is a general thing, like, you know, if you say, like, does so-and-so actually like me, or do they fake our friendship or whatever? Like, if that's a yes or no question, but you could also go, like, what does so-and-so think of me? Am I allowed that one? Because I feel like that's a very, like, we're going to be sitting there for a while the Oracle explains that to me.
Right. But also questions can sound simple, but they're actually very complex. Like, is there a God?
Well, there's
a lot of ways to answer that question, yes. There's a lot of ways to answer that question, no. What do you mean by the question?
Of course, I just realized there's a whole category in here of questions that start with how.
Yeah.
I mean, all the way from how can I be a better person to how can I do cold fusion, you know? Something like that. How can I invent an even smaller, faster cell phones? Like, there's all sorts of things that could make you successful that way.
How can I cure cancer?
Exactly. Sorry. I want to be rich. I don't really care. When I said I was tired of people having cancer, I didn't mean I actually cared enough to do anything.
I mean, the question that would, you know, there's a lot of questions that would come to my mind all at once, like some of the questions I've already posed. Mm. Probably one of the first ones and probably the more persistent one would be, how can I leave... You know, how can I make sure that in my last moments, I can look back at my life and know that I'm leaving this world a better place?
No. Because
that's my main concern.
No, I just assumed that would be.
But that's
yours.
A complex question.
Yes.
Which probably doesn't
have a
very...
If I go, like, how can I be a better person? I'm like, they can't tell me every exhaustive way.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're just going to tell me shit I already know.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Right.
Stop whipping chicken wings at old people. Like, I knew that, but I'm not... Yeah.
It's kind of like...
Really, didn't even crack a smile on whipping chicken wings at old people. I'm disappointed in you.
It's kind of like...
I feel like our friendship is not nearly as deep as I thought it was.
When Solomon is... God tells Solomon he'll give him one thing.
Yeah.
He asks for wisdom. And the impression I get from the story is that the reason he asked for that was because otherwise how would he know what he should ask for? But this is a question. You're not asking for
something. No, exactly.
So now you have to have the wisdom to ask the right question.
I'm pretty sure I just would pull a Homer on it. I'd be like, seriously? And they'd be like, yes.
No, you'd be done.
Exactly. God damn it. Like, no, I'm confident that's how that would play out for me. This is the thing. I wish I had more time. But I may have talked about this before. There's a lot of tough decisions out there that I'm just really glad I'll never have to decide. Like, I don't want to be the one who decides the laws about abortion. I don't want to be the one who decides the laws about the death penalty. Things like that. And don't get me wrong, if somebody was like, hey, you want to decide the laws about abortion? I'm like, well, can I change a couple of things that I know now will at least make things better? But I mean, if somebody was like, you have to decide for literally everyone how the process works, it can be as complicated as you want, but you have to... I'm like, no, I don't want... There's so many factors, many of which are subjective. Like, it's terrible. And same thing with death, but so many things like that. But a lot, anytime it comes up, the trolley problem comes up, I'm like, that's why it's so tricky, is because it's so common. And I'm just like, I love that my life, I don't have to decide that stuff. And this is one of those, like, my main answer to this question is like, I'm so glad this is never going to come up so I don't have to figure this one out. Because it's tough.
It is hard.
Like, there's a big part of me that is like, you should just refuse to, like, say, no, thanks, I'm good. But I'm like, that seems like such a terrible waste. I'm like, yeah, but there's no version of this where there's not gambling involved. Unless I, again, pull a Homer and, like, use the monkey's paw to wish for a turkey sandwich.
What if you were to ask something like, tell me the one thing I don't know that I desperately need to know?
If not a question, can you form that in form of question?
What's the one thing I don't know that I desperately need to know? I mean,
I feel that, but that gets tricky because desperately need to know is super subjective also. Unless, like, they know when the piano movers are going to be on your street. Like, unless there's some, if they're like, you know, you're good. Like, there's stuff that might be useful.
You're the perfect level of ignorance, I guess.
I'm like, well, I mean, like, you know?
Because the person would know something that I don't know. I truly don't know.
But desperately need in what sense? Desperately need to save a life? Desperately need to have a successful career? Desperately need so that you and your wife won't break up? Like, there's so many different desperate needs.
I suppose I
And again, I feel like it's subjective.
You're right, I could put a condition on it.
But I, see, that, and that's another just, like, fuck it moment there. I'm like, I say, what's the question I should have asked?
But then you'll know the question, but not the answer.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's still tempting. Because I also feel like the answer to that, knowing the question,
you might be
would
able to
be very informative.
Yeah, you might be able to figure
no,
it out.
No, but they'd be like, you know, the question was, how should I lower my cholesterol? I'm like, oh, you know. Or if it's something like,
no, I can just do research
yes.
on it and figure it out.
The question is da-da-da, and I'm like, oh, so that means that's going to be of significance. Like,
there are other questions one could ask that you think are going to have a very, like, not is there a God, because that might have such a complex answer you wouldn't understand it. But you could ask a question like, is there life after death? That seems like that would be a very straightforward, almost a yes or no question
that
would have a huge impact on you if you knew.
Yeah.
If they said yes. That's a pretty big deal. I mean, I currently don't believe there is such a thing, but if I asked somebody and they told me there was, I don't know if it would like have an impact on how I live my life, but it might have an impact on how I think about.
That could lead me down a very interesting stuff. Path that could, again, be really good or really bad. We are over time. I want to eat my dinner. So, if you liked this show, good on you. Keep listening. Listen next week. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us about the room and everything else we got wrong and how fucked up that bit where I was talking about the white people's version of Medea's Halloween was. I still am not comfortable with that. Like, I feel like I did that wrong, but I still feel like that's a great explanation for this movie. Watch the movie and tell me if the potential racism, maybe actual racism, was worth the descriptive power, because I'd love to know. Like us on Facebook, even though I know you won't. Facebook just tells me all the time, like, nobody knew is liking it. I'm like, fuck off, Facebook. And then, yeah, we'll talk to you next week. No, I think what I would probably do is use the question to out a celebrity, because I could sell that info for a lot of money.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.